This is the Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. Today is May 1st, 2006. It's approximately 12 noon. We're at the UAW Local 602 Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. First, we'll introduce the team.
John Fedewa.
Jerry Smith.
And I'm Cheryl McQuaid. Today, we're interviewing Walt Benefield. Would you please state your name and spell it for us?
Yeah, my name is Walter L. Benefield, and that's spelled W-A-L-T-E-R. And the last name is spelled B-E-N-N-E-F-I-E-L-D.
And could you tell us what your address is?
My address is 4324 Balmoral Drive, and that's spelled B-A-L-M-O-R-A-L, Lansing, Michigan, 48911.
And are you married? Do you have children?
Yes, I'm married. I have four children now. One deceased.
And where were you born and raised?
I was born in Bessemer, Alabama. December 16, 1946.
And what is your educational level?
I got 2 years of college.
And were you in the military?
Yes, 2 years LCC. I joined the United States Army in 1965. After 3 years in the Army, I went back to Alabama, started working as a mechanic in a truck. What do they call those truck places where they had diesel trucks? It was like a garage, anyway, truck garage. It had 18-wheelers and worked as a truck mechanic for about 6 months, and then my aunt called me and told me that they were hiring at Fisher Body. So I took the next thing smoking and took the bus and came to Lansing and stayed with her.
And your aunt lived here in this area?
Yes, she lived at 109 Huron Street, which is probably five blocks from the plant. My uncle also worked there. His name was Archie Skates. Her name is Jesse Skates, my aunt. Archie had been working there for quite a while. And then I started working.
So how old were you when you hired into Fisher Body?
I think it was 21 years old, right around there. It's been a long time, so.
And do you remember... I know your aunt called and told you about the job, but why did you want to work at Fisher Body?
Well, the job that I had wasn't really paying that much money. I had one child at the time, actually two children at the time. So I kind of wanted to make a little more money and make it better for my family, so... Something pays a little more money. Sometimes you want to move on, and it doesn't take much. You want to make sure your family is okay.
So your uncle worked there also. Did he help get you hired in?
Oh, yeah. He took me over there, and I think the interviewer at that time, his name was Jerry Barker. So he took me in and introduced me to Jerry Barker, and I went through a small process of filling out applications and an interview, and 3 days later I was working.
And what was your hiring date?
That was September 11th, 1968.
Do you remember the very first day when you walked into the doors?
It's been a long time, but it was something new. It was something different. I was ready for something different. I hadn't really been told exactly, you know, how, what they did. I knew that they made cars, but I didn't know any of the processes or what they required or anything like that. All I knew is that I was going to work. It seemed a little bit overwhelming with all of the things that were going on when I first got there, but it was okay. It seemed like to be okay.
What department and what shift did you hire into?
I hired in on the day shift in trim department, one of the first areas right after paint. It was wiring. At that time, it was the back of, I think it was building 9, somewhere back. I think that was the building. I can't remember. It's been, like I said, it's been a long time ago. But I started out on wire screw down, body wire screw down, which was probably the roughest job in that particular department. It seems like everybody that hired in, they always put them on the roughest job there to see whether they really had a desire to work or not. So at that time, people coming in later, it just depended on where they needed a person, and that's where they put them. But at that particular time, those old days, you got the roughest job. That was body wire screw down.
Do you remember the people that were working on that job with you, or was it teams, or?
There were a couple of people working on body wire screw down, I think, at that particular time. I think you did every other car. And I remember it being a kind of a rough job, because you had to lean into the back of the car to start screwing down the body wires, and you screwed them all the way from the back or the back seat area all the way to the front of the car. So it was kind of a rough job, but. Also, I remember that the little clips that held the wires were really sharp, and they really tore up your hands if you didn't hold them just right. If you didn't get them screwed down just right. So, yeah, I remember some of the people that I worked with at that particular time. They were quite some characters. I remember the guy that broke me in, his name was Charlie Carter, black guy. He was utility at that particular time, and I'll never forget Charlie. After about 2 days of working with Charlie, you know, he'd make sure I was all right, get me started in the morning time, and switch off and on with me back and forth during the day to get me acclimated and used to the job. And about the third day, I was working along and starting to get tired. And I looked over and on the bench there, which was adjacent to my work area, there was Charlie laying on the bench about half asleep. And I said, Charlie, I said, aren't you going to help me with this job or get down line? Charlie looked up from me about half asleep and says, well, that's your job, not mine, he said. So at that particular time, I said to myself, well, if I want this job, I guess I'm going to have to speed up and get going. So, and that's what I did. And later on that day, supervisor, Tom, which was Tom Brown, was my supervisor at that particular time on that shift. He came through and I was sitting down on the bench. He looked at me and he says, how's it going? And I says, it's going fine. You know, we're doing good. And Charlie was still laying over on the bench sleeping. He says, are you missing any cars or anything? I says, no, I'm doing just fine. And he wondered, he says, Charlie's everything all right? He asked Charlie, is everything all right? Charlie said, yeah, it's just fine. He was wondering, why was I sitting on the bench and being a rookie on the job? Usually the rookies are always down the line running, trying to catch up. And here I was, up ahead, you know, on my job, so I could take a couple of seconds to sit down on the bench. So I was doing really good on the job. So that was some of the early memories. Something I'll never forget when he told me that was my job and not his. That really stuck in my mind that if I wanted that job, then I had to go to work. So, but after that, you know, I was never one to not be able to catch on to a job pretty easy. So it wasn't very long after that they saw that I was pretty handy. Didn't take me very long to start catching on to doing jobs. And so they asked me to be utility. So I started working on utility, paid a little more money, which that's exactly what I was there for. So, but it was really, really hard at that particular time because usually the utility guys usually got the harder jobs because the people that were doing the harder jobs was the ones that usually didn't come to work or usually the ones that were sick or out of work because of those hard jobs. Or they quit because of those hard jobs. So the utility people really, they usually got the rougher jobs every once in a while, unless somebody was on vacation or something like that, and they got easier jobs then, but.
So, being a utility person, did you break in a lot of the new people when they came in, being that you were on those harder jobs?
Usually, in your particular area, once you learn the jobs in your area, then you'd break people in on those particular jobs. But more often than not, you were either doing other people's jobs that, in different areas. You would go to other areas rather than in your particular area most of the time, doing jobs rather than breaking people in. Most of the people came to work at that, like I said, unless they were either sick or vacation or hurt or something like that.
So the body wire job sounded very physical. Do you remember the aches and pains of being a new hire?
Oh yeah. Your back was the first thing that started aching. Your hands, like I said, from those little wire clips, were cut up because the little clips had burrs in them, and it was almost physically impossible to do that job and wear gloves at the same time because you had to use little screws to screw the body wires down, and you had the thumb screws and then reach in your pouch to get those little clips, and it was really, really hard to do that job without wearing gloves. So your hands took a beating, your back took a beating. Other than that, it wasn't that bad as far as being physical on your feet or legs. Being in the Army, just getting out of the Army, my legs and feet never really hurt me that bad.
You still have that marching.
Yes, marching.
Can you tell us a little bit about the environment inside the plant? What did you do for lunches, break time? You mentioned that you had another black man that worked with you. Were there many African Americans, Hispanic people in the trim department at that time?
There wasn't a lot of blacks or Hispanics at that time. There were a few. But there wasn't really a lot of them at that particular time. There were two Hispanic guys that installed the wires in the car, which I had to screw down, but there wasn't really that many Hispanics or blacks working there then. And for whatever reason, I can't remember the name of the guy that I worked with at that particular time, because he quit and somebody else hired in, or he went to a different job. Usually, like I said, if they hired in new people, they took and brought those new people to that particular job. So I think I was on that wire screw down job for maybe 6 months. Then I went to the windshield department, where they install windshields.
Was that a better area to work in? Better jobs? Or?
Oh, yeah, that was a better area. It wasn't as physically demanding as the body wire job, but it was a little better, a little easier on your hands. And I remember I was installing the chrome trim that went around the windshield glass. And the back window glass at that particular time.
Was that back when they used to use like paddles to paddle the chrome strip on? There were like clips in there holding it? Or?
Yeah, you had to install the clips and then put the chrome trim molding on. And those were kind of hard on your hands because you had to pound the clips on. And that was kind of hard, but it was okay. It was a little better than the wire clip job, I tell you that.
Do you remember, were there any new hire initiations or pranks pulled on you when you first hired in? Or as you got used to the jobs, were there any pranks that you pulled on other people?
Boy, I'm sure there was. But I just can't really remember any at this particular time. Like I said, it's been quite a while ago. So I can't really remember any of the pranks. I know there used to be a lot of kidding and joking around, or they might fill your glove up full of urethane or something like that at that particular time. And after you come back from a break, and you put your hand in your glove, and it'd be full of some of the white cream that they use to lubricate the rubbers, something like that, or you know, simple stuff. And everybody's standing back and watch you curse and laugh, snicker.
So it was all done in fun.
Oh, right? Yeah, all done in fun. Get the new guy, you know. But, and I'm sure I got a few other people myself, so. As a matter of fact, I'll never forget, we had a foreman. His name was Dwayne Reese. So we used to take it. Every once in a while, put the grease that we used to grease some of our bolts with. We used to take that and rub it on the earpiece on his phone. And somebody would go to a different area and call back to his phone. And he'd reach up, grab the phone, stick it to his ear. Hello, hello. And everybody would just die. Well, I remember one day I got caught greasing up his phone. So he sent me to the office for greasing up his phone. They gave me a reprimand. I'll never forget that, but it wasn't so funny once I went to the office for a reprimand, but you used to play pranks like that on each other. You know, different stuff, but it was all done in fun.
How did you pass the time? The pranks? Did you listen to radios?
Yeah, you could play radios at that particular time when they started letting them come in. The union, they fought to get radios in to kind of help the board. So once the radios start come in, then it was okay. That would help a little bit on boredom. But really, at that particular time, you really didn't have that much to do, because you were usually working from one job to the next. And unless you were really, really good at that job where you could take your time and maybe read a little bit. You could read the paper sometimes on your job if you got really, really good at doing your job, you could get up the line a little bit. And by getting up the line, I mean do your job ahead enough so you could read.
So like a paragraph at a time?
Maybe a paragraph, yeah, a couple sentences. So you could read a book.
Did you view your coworkers as brothers and sisters?
No, not really. I view my coworkers usually as coworkers. I didn't really view them as brothers and sisters. I just viewed them as coworkers. You know?
And how long did you do that glass job? Actually, it was the moldings around the glass.
Yeah, maybe another 6 months, because right after that, I like I said, I went to utility, so I was all over the shop usually, in trim that is, being utility. My what is called an MC what's the terminology for MC?
Manufacturing
coordinator. Back in the day, they used to call him a general foreman, but it's a manufacturing coordinator now. His name was John Powers, and he's the one that asked me if I wanted to go on utility, and at that particular time, it wasn't that really that many black guys on utility, but I'd say maybe three, maybe four black guys on utility and trim at the most. But I went from that glass job to utility.
And was that utility within that same department?
Within the glass department, but then I went to other departments. I went to from the back glass department to the door glass department. Over the years, I've probably up until the time that I was went to a supervisor's job, I probably was in 4, maybe 5 areas in the trim department. And that was over a span of about 10 years from the date I hired in. I went to supervisor after working about 10 years.
So what made you want to be a supervisor?
Less work, more money. At that particular time, one of my friends, his name is Robert Vaughn, he went to supervision, and they were looking for some more black people to become supervisors. They were complaining about not enough black people being supervisors at that particular time. So they were looking for some other people to become supervisors. I don't know why they ever chose me, because at that particular time I was sort of a rebel. But they asked me if I wanted to be a supervisor, and I thought it over, and I said, why not? I'll give it a try anyway. I tried it, and it worked out for me.
Was the application period for that, was it pretty extensive, or?
No, not really. Not for a supervisor at that particular time. You basically had to have a knowledge of the process in your particular area, the jobs in your area, and for whatever reason, usually when you started on supervisor at that particular time, they usually put you in your own area, which was actually harder because you had to work with and or discipline or the same guys that you worked on the line with at that particular time. So it was harder. And that kind of made you or broke you at that particular time, because you could either handle it and deal with it. Like I said, you had to be able to discipline the people that you work with. So it was kind of rough.
Do you have any memories of when you first became a supervisor, something that happened that that sticks in your mind?
Well, I probably the first time that I had to fire somebody for whatever reason, that was probably the hardest thing that I've ever done, because it was hard for me to discipline people anyway, you know. And I don't know if it was because I was just a softy by nature or caring, if you want to call it caring or being soft or whatever, but I always kind of cared about people and never really wanted to see somebody lose their good paying job to go out on the streets and have to figure out some other way to make a living. But some of the guys made it really, really, really hard for you not to be able to supervise, discipline them, I mean, because they, for whatever reason, whether they didn't come to work or whether they didn't do their job or whether they were drunk all the time. There was quite a bit of drinking back at that time. And a lot of guys came to work and they were either still half drunk from the night before, or they'd get drunk at work, or whether they didn't come to work, you know, you'd have to discipline them. But that was, for me, one of the things that sticks in my mind. The first time I had to fire somebody for, and that was for drinking. But before it got to that point, that person had to go through an extensive amount of discipline for at that particular time for him to be at the point where they would fire him for drinking. So that was something hard for me.
But because they had to go through quite a lengthy process to get fired, they must have had a pretty bad problem.
Yeah.
With the drinking.
Oh yeah.
Is there anything in place to help those employees out, or?
They later had employee assistance, and I can't remember whether at that particular time whether they had an employee assistance program in place. I know later on they did, but at that particular time, I don't think that they really had an employee assistance. It's hard for me to remember, but I'm not sure whether they had it at that particular time, but it was hard.
What were some other, for instances, of what a supervisor would have to discipline employees for?
Not doing their job, making unnecessary scrap, being late for work, or being late coming back from lunch, or not coming to work. The usual shop things, or most of the things that in everyday life any other place would discipline a person for.
Jerry Smith.
They had to have done it more than just once, though, before they were disciplined, right? Just like now, I mean, it would take more than just one time.
Yeah, usually they got a first time, they got a what they call a verbal warning. That's just where you sit them down and tell them, hey, you're screwing up, or you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, I should say. And then they give them a verbal warning. That's their initial thing. And then from there, they'd get a written warning or a couple of written warnings, and then they would start getting time off after that. So, yeah. It'd be more than one item before they got fired, unless it was something that was really, 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 really bad. I can't think of anything that...
I was going to say, did you have anybody that was really, really, really bad?
No, not really. Not really. Usually I had a pretty good bunch of people that I worked with. And they kind of knew me, and I kind of knew them. And like I said, I was kind of a softy, so I'd give them a little bit more than most people would, I guess. Chances, I mean, give them a few more chances than most people would. But, you know, in order for you to keep doing your job, for you to keep getting paid for doing your job, you had to do your job. And sometimes that entailed disciplining people.
And you were mostly in trim shop and C-trim as a supervisor then?
Yeah, C-trim as a supervisor.
Now, was that when both lines were together? Sorry, Cheryl McCoy. Or was that after the lines were split up?
This was when the lines were running together. I started being a supervisor before they split the lines from one floor to the next floor. So, it's quite a while ago.
You've seen a lot of changes in the plant. Anything that sticks out more than others? Like we were just saying that both the lines used to be on one floor and they changed them. How about stock, that type of thing? Can you remember any of the differences with the material department in how they presented stock to you?
Material. I can't see really a major, major change in anything that material. The only major change material wise was they didn't have as much in the plant over the years as they used to. Used to be they'd have more material on hand. Later, in the process, they started where they just-in-time stock. So, a lot of times we went home because we didn't have that in just-in-time stock there. So, that was a learning process and, you know, growing pains on that particular thing. But usually they had all the stock, and it was always presented to the line, to the employee. So that you could do your job, whether it was boxes or bins or whatever. But that, I think, is probably the main thing. They went away from having all the stock in the plant to just in time.
Could you walk us through a typical day of a supervisor's work day? I mean, were there meetings, audits? What type of things did you have to do being a management person?
Usually, supervisor was there before everybody, or they wanted them there at a certain amount of time before everybody else got there so they could get their head counts in. Make sure they had enough people to run their particular area. You'd call in your head count to your MC or general supervisor. After that, it was the process of making sure that you had quality jobs going down the line. That was always something that I tried to do, is make sure that we had good quality cars going out of our particular area. And you had to make sure that the cars coming to you were in good shape too, because everything coming, all the cars coming to you, usually connected in some way with your particular area. So if their job wasn't done right, then you couldn't really do what you had to do. And there, every once in a while, there were jobs coming down the line that weren't complete that you had to let continue going down the line at that particular time so they could continue to get built. And you'd have a meeting about 10 o'clock before lunch. And they'd sit down and talk about absenteeism and what are you doing to curb absenteeism, or if your particular area had defects. And then you had to take the information that they were giving you from repair, go back and talk to your people about what they were doing wrong on that particular day, or you be on the phone quite a bit from the supervisors that were downline from you, calling and letting you know whether you had something wrong on a particular cars or whether your quality wasn't like it should be. Then you'd have lunch, and after lunch you'd have to worry about people coming back that weren't quite able to do their jobs, whether they were a little inebriated or not. I remember before I was a supervisor, I was working the night shift. And every once in a while at lunchtime, we'd go out and somebody would take a car full of us, and we'd go over to the party store and get big 40 ounces of beer, come back in the parking lot and sit out there and drink 40 ounces of beer or 32 ounces of beer. And the guys would drink some beer, get out the car, run around the car and burp beer so they could drink some more beer before they, you know, keep yourself from being so full of carbonation. You drink beer and then go back in and go to work. So I had done some of that too. So I knew that the guys did that. So you had to kind of watch out for the guys that go out to work and had just a little too much to drink at that particular time.
And speaking of drinking a little bit of beer, did any of your employees ever visit the establishment across the street, Harry's, or, oh, there's a couple of them, Irish Pub?
Yeah, oh yeah. At that particular time, we used to have about 42 minutes for lunch. Those guys could get a lot of drinking done. I know they used to go to Harry's, but that wasn't really for me. I didn't really like going over to Harry's or any of the other Irish Pub or over at the Shop Stop. That was another name for one of the local establishments. But I didn't really like going to those. So if we had anything, when I was working on the line, we usually either you brought your liquor in to work with you. Yeah. And they used to have like the guards at the gate. They'd check your lunch box, make sure you didn't have any bottles of alcohol coming in. But you had found little ways to hide your alcohol, little pints of whiskey, and some of your. You want to stop that? And
I always heard that when they put you on supervision and put you in the department where you worked, that it was a way for them to figure out if you could make it or not as a supervisor.
Oh yeah, because the people that you work with, they know what kind of guy you are. They know you as a person. They went out drinking with you or whatever, so they know you, and they kind of make it hard for you because it's hard to supervise people that you know. It's just like renting to your relatives, you know. If you're renting the house to relatives, it's hard to throw them out or collect your money, you know. So, but you have to deal with it. It's hard. We were talking about a second ago about ways of getting your liquor back in. Most ingenious thing I've ever seen was a guy that sealed his alcohol in little plastic bags. He'd have little plastic bags that he'd seal them up with. It was seal-a-meals. He had his. He used to take and have vodka sealed in little packets, and then seal-a-meal packets. And I don't know how he got it done, but he'd have almost a half a pint of vodka and two or three of them little bags, and he'd sneak them in the plant that way. And I tell you, one of the funniest things I'll never forget. We were working on the line one night, and we were working the line back, and one of the guys that, I can't remember his name, but he had got snockered during the night. He made it through the night, and he was one of the guys that was helping us work the line back at the end of the shift when I was working on the line being utility. And we got to our department, and he was acting kind of goofy. So he was talking about playing football, and the doors on the cars were open. So he got down on a three-point stand like he was playing football and started going down through the line there, knocking the doors closed with his shoulder, banging dents into the doors. He was just that snockered up and about drunk at the end of the night. So the next day they wanted to know who had banged in all the doggone doors, all those doors that they had to change because of the dents in the side of the doors. And I was on the afternoon shift, and the guy came in to work that day, and he says, God, he says, I don't know if I can make it today. I said, well, what's wrong with you? He says, my shoulder is just killing me. And I said, you idiot, you banged in all those doors. I says, you better hope that nobody else saw you, because they're going to fire you for damaging all those doggone doors. They had about 10 doors that they had to change this morning on the day shift because you went down through there banging the doors in. He says, I didn't do that. I says, yes, you did. And you got a sore shoulder to prove it. That's just some of the crazy stuff that went on.
Now, did that happen while you were a supervisor or while you were hourly?
That's while I was hourly.
What would happen if you did happen while you were a supervisor?
Oh, I probably would have had to discipline the guy for doing that, but he would have deserved it because that's just crazy, crazy stuff. But over the years, I've seen some people do some weird stuff. So, but back at that time, they used to work a lot of hours every day. The plant used to work sometimes 10 hours. And then they worked the lines back, so you'd come in and work 11 hours. And sometimes you'd work 10, 11 hours on Saturday when the plant wasn't working, just to take care of some of the repairs before they shipped the cars over to Oldsmobile. It was a lot of hours every week because of repairs or things that weren't quite right. They didn't quite get together. They had to go back and repair in the repair hole or the holding area. The holding area is where they hold the cars before they ship them over to chassis. But there's a lot of hours for whatever reason, whether it's because something broke down in the body shop and they couldn't make cars, or whether they ran out of parts. Then they worked 10 or 11 hours, and they worked Saturdays, and you'd be really whipped by the end of the week working all those hours, but you made it. I mean, you know, made good money. So,
have you developed any friendships that extended outside of the plant?
Oh yeah, I met guys that I was friend with since I hired in. Guys that used to go and shoot pool together or go fishing. Yeah. Not a lot of people. I'm kind of a loner. I don't have a lot of friends, but a couple, three people that, you know, I go golfing with or go fishing with or go shoot pool with, or somebody that's usually got the same interests that I have, you know. Some of the same interests, I should say, over the years, but not a lot of people from the shop.
I just thought of another question I wanted to ask you about being a supervisor. Were there dress codes that you had to follow? Any rules that were in place that maybe aren't now, but used to be?
Oh, yeah. They always wanted you to try to look professional that particular time when I first went on salary. They wanted you to wear a dress shirt and dress pants and some sort of like dress shoes. And but as time went on, they changed where you didn't really have to wear ties or anything, but they still wanted you to be present yourself neat and not wear jeans. And but at when I first started on salary, they wanted you to wear your ties, and which I didn't mind. I mean, you know, it was okay. But boy, you could really get some clothes filthy or dirty from urethane or oil or grease or whatever. And besides it, losing a tie every once in a while, that was one of the things at that particular time when you first went on salary. The guys liked to, especially the guys that were in the headliner area, they'd love to catch you leaning over in the car looking to see what they're doing and snip the end of your tie off.
Yeah, lose a tie right quick.
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened is if every time you'd lean in the car, whether it was that car, and you go to the next guy would get a little bit more off the end of your tie, reach over, grab it, cut a little bit more off the end of it. And you'd be yelling and screaming and cursing at them, and they just love that. They just made their day. Have a little fun with the guys. I usually got along pretty good with the guys because, like I said, I wasn't too straight-laced, but unless I just had to be, but seemed to get along pretty good with everybody.
So what else creative did the employees do? Steal-a-meal liquor was really good.
Oh, yeah.
What about chairs and couches and beds in the park?
Oh, they had all kinds of ways of making little chairs from using the, I'm not sure if you know what the little rollers are that wire rolls of wire come on. It's like a thread spindle. Yeah. And they make little seats and take them and pad them and take little bits of the vinyl tops that came out of the vinyl top area where they had a bad vinyl. They'd cover those and make chairs out of them. Christmas trees, they take make cardboard Christmas trees and ornaments out of different throwaway items like little cardboard pieces. They take them and use them to make bulbs with or help string the lights and that kind of stuff. But oh yeah, they're very, very creative. But they're also pretty good people. They also tried to help people charity wise. That's, you know, Fisher Body people were always charity conscious and always tried to help people that were kind of down on their luck or having problems. But yep, they were very, very ingenious. They were always figuring out a way how to do something. A lot of the tools that we used were to make your job easier came from a lot of the guys that worked right there on the line, because they were always looking for a way to help themselves do their job easier. So a lot of tools or innovations in the factory are coming right from the guys. And the suggestion plan helped a lot, too. When they start paying a certain amount of money through the suggestion plan, the guys that help them, they made quite a bit of money. And it was innovative for General Motors. It always helped to reduce cost or something like that.
You mentioned Christmas trees, and it has me wondering, did you participate in some of the Christmas dinners? Or?
Oh, yeah. Everybody always participate in Christmas dinners. You brought a dish to pass and whatever. You had somebody go through and get a list of who's bringing what. And we always had a Christmas dinner and Thanksgiving dinner, and any excuse to eat was a good excuse. So.
That's how I remember it.
Oh, yeah. But it just kind of helped the camaraderie of the area, you know, as a group working together. And so, yeah, it was good.
I asked you about developed friendships that extended outside the plant. We all know that there was definitely one. You met your wife in the plant.
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell us about, she was an hourly?
Yeah, I was, that was in 1978. Matter of fact, she hired in September, right about the same time that I hired in, but just in 10 years later. I hired in 68, she hired in 78, around the same time. And I was a supervisor at the time. I had just started being a supervisor. Like I said, it was about 10 years between the time that I started working there till I started being a supervisor. And I was new as being a supervisor. And I was working in 3X at that particular time in the headliner area. And they had just, over our changeover period, and our changeover period is where they take and go from one model to the next year's model. That's why they call it the changeover process. But yeah, we changed areas at that particular time, and we were in 3X. And so she hired in, and they brought her in into my area. And at that particular time, she was installing wiper motor wiper arms and wiper transmissions, and that's the apparatus that runs your wiper arms. They call it a wiper motor transmission. But yeah, she started working for me, and just kind of started from there.
So were there any problems with you being a salary person and her being hourly? Did upper management frown on that at all? I always heard they did, so I don't know.
Well, they kind of, sort of did, but we didn't really have any. I didn't really have any problems. Nobody really said anything. If they said anything, they probably said it behind my back, but I didn't really have very many problems. Like I said, I usually got along pretty much with everybody.
That could have been older management that...
Well, yeah. You had some prejudice, in the plant at that particular time. And I'm sure that they probably said things, but they wouldn't come right out and say it to you, because they figured that, well, if we come right out and say it to him and then we have to fire him, maybe he'll sue us for it, because saying that we're prejudiced, you know. And there were, at that particular time, it was, a lot of things were happening with civil rights and all that kind of stuff. So, no, they never really said anything, because I wouldn't have listened to them anyway. You know, matters of the heart, what's my business is my business. As long as I wasn't showing favoritism or not doing my job because, you know, of it, I didn't see whether it was any of their business or not. So you try to do what you're supposed to do. Do your job. And you usually didn't have any problems. But no, they really didn't want you to fraternize with the employees. And I don't see why, because they were some of the biggest offenders. You know, you find out later that the guys that were upper management were some of the biggest offenders of fraternizing with the employees. They just kept it quiet. Uh-huh. Or they wanted to. And if they got mad at you, it's because they wanted to do it themselves and didn't have a chance. But we got along pretty good, so. And we didn't really start seeing each other until she started working for a different supervisor. So, I mean, we were kind of close. We'd see each other every once in a while, but didn't really start getting serious until we started working for different, or she started working for a different supervisor.
What, in your opinion, made a good or a bad supervisor?
Being able to look past the obvious, and caring about your people and caring about making sure you had good quality jobs leaving your particular area. I mean, it's easy to blame a person for not doing his job, but it's hard to go in and really investigate why that person wasn't really doing their job, you know. Whether it's because of the equipment, or whether it was the material, or whether it was that person just having a bad day because of his family, some family problems. Because I've had guys that miss things on the car, and I know that they're a type of person or that normally wouldn't do that. But in order to discipline that person for not doing his job, which they wanted you to do sometimes, you really had to figure out why that person wasn't doing his job. Is it because he's just not there that day, whether he's having family problems and he can't really concentrate on his job? Because that really has an effect on people sometimes, family things. So I think looking inside to see what's really the cause of problems, making sure that you've got good quality cars going out of your area. And I think that's probably some of the better things.
What type of a relationship did you have with the skilled trades arena? Did any skilled trades people do any government work for you?
Oh, yeah, they all did government work for everybody, for supervisors. For the people that's probably translating this by government work, it probably means that doing jobs for you that weren't really related to factory work or building cars. let's say if you needed a locker, a personal locker built, then the guy that would be considered government work. Or you need a special tool made so that you could pick your golf balls up out of the cup, that that would be considered government work. Yeah. So, yeah, I've had guys that were really, you know, people that I've dealt with over time that I became associates with, or that made things for me or did things for me that were over and beyond what their normal job description called for. Yeah. But usually you kind of did things for them one way or another, you know. Whether it be to help them go over and help them do something around their house or build something for them, or if they're building a deck, you know, you go over and drink beer with them and do stuff for them and help them with it. And they, if you needed a locker built, they'd be more than happy to build a locker for you. So, yeah, no problem, Walt. I'll build you one.
Another question I have about in the plant was, what did you feel made a good line worker? There were people that just couldn't do it and quit. What did you look for in a person to know you had a good employee?
It wasn't so much as whether they could or couldn't do that particular job. To me, my thing was, if that person showed that he had what I believe is probably the best quality that he wanted to do that particular job. He wasn't the type of person that would just quit when he's learning a job, you know. That person, to me, was a good quality and an employee that made me want to go an extra mile for that particular employee, because everybody's not suited to do all kinds of jobs. But the people that don't give up, whether they're suited for that particular job or not, those are the people that, to me, made the better employees. If they came to work, if they showed that they were trying to do a good job and didn't give up, then I felt that those were your best employees.
Do you have a happiest or saddest moment within the plant?
I do. The happiest moment is when I retired. I have never been so glad to be done with something.
When did you retire?
I retired in June of 2002. But yeah, I was beginning to be disillusioned with being the supervisor at that particular time because of some of the things that I felt were going on that shouldn't have been going on. So I was happy. Sometimes you don't feel like going in there, and when you don't feel like going in there anymore, then it's best to be leaving. So that, to me, was one of the happiest moments for me, the day I retired. But probably the saddest time was when I got fired. I got fired as a supervisor, yeah.
Well, I didn't know that you were fired.
Oh, yeah, I got in a little ruckus. Like I said, I was a rebel. So, I got into a little altercation with one of the supervisors.
Stop.
Do you have a saddest moment in the plant, Walt?
Yeah, probably the saddest moment is when I got fired. Me and one of the other supervisors, Gary Bobert, had a little altercation, and I got fired, and I was a supervisor at that particular time, but for whatever reason, they hired me back after I threatened to sue them for $6 million. And I feel like if I didn't have a good case, besides some of the other supervisors stuck up for me, and told them that they were wrong for firing me. So they hired me back. I think I probably wish that they gave me, let me sue them for $6 million.
That was what my choice was going to be.
Work.
Money.
20 more years or $6 million. $6 million. At the time I was a rebel, I probably would have drank that $6 million up in a couple weeks and still wouldn't have had no job. So it's probably good.
Now, as an hourly employee, if two hourly people have an argument, a fight in the plant, both of those employees get the same punishment.
Discipline.
Is it the same with the salaried employees, or
no.
Were you the only one fired?
Yeah, I was the only one. So.
What about a funniest moment in the plant?
The funniest moment. Probably the funniest moment is one of the MCs. Had a tail put on him. By a tail, usually the guys will take a piece of string or a piece of tape or something and put a big old cotton ball or something on the end of it and stick it to the back of you. One of the MCs, which was legendary for being a hard nose, got a tail stuck on him by one of the employees. And he had that tail on him all day. Wouldn't nobody tell him about it. And every time he'd go down, walking down the aisle or down through the line, everybody would just crack up and roll. And yeah, guys laughing so hard, they had tears coming out of the aisle. Because here he was, the big hard-ass supervisor, and somebody had tailed him. So that was probably one of the funniest times. Of course, I laughed too. So.
Did you ever see anybody get hurt in the factory?
Yeah, a couple times. One I can remember was a guy got part of his finger cut off. We were installing tail lights in trim shop. This was when I was on the line. And one of the guys was going down the line, and he was working down the line. Some guys just weren't as fast as others were installing the taillights. Well, he was working down the line and still trying to install the taillight to get it done rather than just letting it go and calling for the repair guy. He was still trying to get it done. Well, the tension in his air hose was pinching his finger against the edge of the trunk, the metal rim of the trunk. And at that particular time, it was really sharp metal. So, and it pinched his finger to the point where it cut the end of his finger off right there on that metal right there on the trunk. So that was one of the times I've seen people get hurt. Other than that, it's, you know, just minor scrapes, bruises, bumps, slip and falls, or nothing really where a person has lost their life. Or I haven't seen people have heart attacks. I know that there have been instances where people have had heart attacks or hurt themselves really bad. Or I've seen people put what they call a hog ring through their fingers, and but hog ring is a gun that attached the seat covers to the wire frames of the seats, and they use the hog ring guns to attach those with it. It's like a circle piece of wire. Once it's attached, it's almost like a circle. So hence the name ring, and it's like a hog ring. That's what they call it, gun. But anyway, I've seen people get those through their hands or fingers or and then, when they were working there. But other than that, nothing really, really, really major.
Before we started the interview, you mentioned that you worked in the paint department.
Yeah, I'd say 10 from 91 or 92 until I retired in 02. I worked in the paint department. Trim department, I felt that they weren't giving me raises for the job that I was doing. And I think that part of that was because of them holding a grudge for having to hire me back at that particular time. The MC or the superintendent was at that particular time was still the MC. So they asked for people to go to paint department because the paint department had lost quite a few supervisors. And through through retirement, and one guy got killed in the paint department when they were cleaning out tanks, and he became overcome with fumes. So they needed a couple of supervisors in paint, so I volunteered just to get away from that particular situation and maybe start over, make a little bit of extra money. That's always been my driving force, is make a little extra money. But then I went to paint, and I did. I started making more money because I was doing a good job, I felt, in trim, and I just felt I wasn't getting compensated enough. So I went to paint and started doing a good job in paint, and what I felt was a good job anyway. I don't know how the rest of them felt, but I started making more money.
So you got the raises in paint that you should have gotten in trim.
Yeah. That's it.
And what about the environment in paint? How much different was that than the trim department?
Oh, it's very different. Very different. Down to the type of deodorant that you can use or can't use in the paint department. Because the kind of deodorant that you use can affect the paint quality, or whether they'll get what they call fish eyes or craters in the paint. Some of your deodorants with chromium will cause that, so you can't lean over the cars or be close to them, or certain aftershaves, even certain lotions or certain soaps that you use. So it's quite different.
Just has like a chemical
reaction to the paint, yeah.
Wow. And was it stinky, clean?
The paint department to me was a little bit cleaner, somewhat. Just depends on what area in the paint department you worked, but the smell of the paint fumes was different. Sometimes I think that being around that paint right now is part of the reason why I sometimes have breathing problems. I know that smoking, all the years that I smoke, is partly the cause I have breathing problems, but I think being in that paint environment with the fumes and the caustic chemicals that they have and they use to mix the paint sometimes cause me my problems with breathing, but as far as the smell is concerned, it's just the getting used to the smell of the fumes, the paint fumes. Other than that, the process where they dip the cars in before they're painted, it's called Alpo. That's basically the reason why people think the paint department smells bad. It's just the smell of the Alpo itself, the chemicals in it, that cause it to make it stinky or less attractive, or whatever you want to call it, you know. But other than that, it's not much different. If the people in the area is keeping clean, trim is clean, the paint department, if they do the same thing, the paint department is clean. So,
did you notice any big difference in the employees between the paint shop and the trim shop?
Well, not so much employees, mostly supervisors. I think that the upper management was more laid back in paint department than in trim and maybe body shop. But employees, I mean, you know, employees are employees. They'll get away with it, what you let them get away with, or they'll do as least as you let them do, you know. As far as that, I noticed that you had different type of what we want to call injuries from employees, from the difference between paint and trim. Usually a lot of injuries in the paint department had to do with hands, and that came from squeezing the guns that they use to apply sealer, or the spray guns, or their resistance because they're attached to hoses, cause a lot of hand problems, or carpal tunnel in the wrists and forearms, where in trim you usually got different types of injuries. I mean, you got some carpal tunnel, but not quite as much, mostly shoulders and that type of things I found out in trim were the problems. But in paint, hands were the problems. But that's about the big difference between employees.
Lansing was known as capital of quality. Why do you think it was called that?
Because Lansing plant usually got a lot of accolades as far as their quality was concerned. And that's because basically everybody wanted to see, you know, good cars. I mean, you got your rule of thumb where you got 96% or 95% of the people are good people, and you got your 4 or 5 or 6% bad people. But I felt that 90% of the people that were there usually wanted to see a good product leaving because of whether it was just the pride that they had, or they wanted to see good cars going out of there. So I think that Lansing plant got a lot of accolades as far as quality was concerned, through the media, through the associations that judge quality. Lansing got good quality, so they call it, and since Lansing was the capital of Michigan, they call it the capital of quality also.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. Is there anything that I've not asked you that you'd like to share with us?
You might want to, for your next interviewers, have them give you a overall picture of what they thought of their experience up to that particular time with General Motors. And I would say that my particular overall experience with General Motors or working for General Motors and working with people from the union or the union was actually good. My overall feeling is that you had bad people on both sides of the fence, union and management. You had a ton more on the good side, union and management, than you did on the bad side. But I think over all in all, my experience working for General Motors and working with the union was good. I felt that everybody pretty much got along. Of course, you can't, even in your family with your sisters and brothers, you can't get along with them 100% of the time, all the time. But it was more, I know you said at the beginning of the interview, you asked me whether it was like sisters and brothers. Well, it was similar. I mean, you know, I call my workers as associates or colleagues, but you get along with people, and you might want to say that that's like being sisters and brothers, but if you get along with people, you know, your overall experience is good. So I would say that overall, I enjoyed, and really, General Motors gave back to me probably twice as much as I gave to General Motors. Because I was able to retire at an early age. I was only like 55, 56. And I'm getting paid to sit on my behind. And being retired, I was able to save some money so that I could retire early. So all in all, General Motors was actually good to me. I don't really have any qualms about General Motors. I had some qualms about the people that I had to work with and some of the things that was done. But all in all, I'm happy. That's why I retired early, because I couldn't handle some of the things that the people were doing, things that they should have been doing right, they weren't doing right. So rather than sit there and fume about it and be a miserable person, I figured I'd sit on my butt at home and not even worry about it. But thanks for having me. I appreciate you wanting to hear my opinion. And it's been a pleasurable experience. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.